This is the operator. I'd like to remind all parties that this call is being recorded. If anyone does have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you. Would you like a roll call, Jeff?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, can you start with the roll call and then I will formally introduce the meeting?
Good morning, good evening to everyone. On today's call, we have Jeff Newman, Paul Diaz, Brian Winterfeld, James Bladel, Gabriel Pinheiro, Tatiana Kramtsova. From staff, we have Marika Konings, Liz Gaster, Linda Saint-Géry, and Gisela Gruber-White, myself. And apologies, we have Wolf Knorben, David Maher, Mike Rodenbach, and Marilyn Cade. And if I could please remind everyone to please state their names when they speak. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you.
Also, apologies from Margie Milam.
Ah, thank you, Marika. This is Jeff Newman. I'm the chair of the Policy Development Process Work Team. It is October 8th, 2009, and I want to welcome everyone to the call that can make it. I appreciate you all showing up. I know it's a different time than our normal time, and next week on the 15th, we will return to our normal, our regularly scheduled time, and that'll be the last meeting prior to the Seoul conference. So that said, what I want to do now is, I know Marika, you sent an update to the list, but maybe just to read it into the record as to the what the status is of the survey and just where we are with that, with the survey for stage two.
This is Marika. After the last call and another reminder that was sent out, we had two more people completing the survey, namely Mike Rodenbach and Brian Winterfeld. So those results have been added to the overview that's up on Adobe Connect, and it has also been posted on the wiki.
Great. Thank you very much. And, you know, it's less people than I'd like on this call, but I think what will be good is to go through some of the other questions that we had on the survey, where kind of where we left off, just so that we can get good progress on a second draft, or sorry, a draft of stage two. So, Marika, do you want to just go into where we are with kind of the draft for stage two, what you expect the timeline to be for getting something out? Is it possible to have something prior to Seoul?
I'll do my best. I haven't started drafting anything yet. I wanted to wait for this call, and you know, last time we had some good discussion on some of these issues, and you know, some further input on maybe concrete recommendations. So that's, you know, something I really appreciate and is helpful for drafting the report. So following this call, I'll start that process. As you know, Jeff, there are a lot of other things going on at the same time, so I'll definitely do my best to get something on paper that that maybe can be reviewed in Seoul and discussed.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be great. It would be good to have, and I know it's not within the 15-day board requirement, but this is not really a formal draft. It's kind of just a rough draft, even if, Marika, it's more an outline form, just so that we can have that to discuss. And then, if possible, since I believe we are most of the way through stage three, if we could do a survey on stage three and get that out prior to Seoul, maybe go over some of those results if we can do that within time. What are your thoughts on that?
I'll do my best. That's all I can say for now.
Absolutely. If not, then possibly even we could do we can ask some of those questions live in person at Seoul if we can't.
Probably if I can't get the survey out before Seoul, I probably can do it during Seoul because I hope to have some time there. And in principle, it's not that hard to get the survey up and running. So if I don't manage to get that, you know, done by that time, hopefully during the week of Seoul, it should be up.
Great. Okay. So with that said, let's see if we can find where we did. I don't know if you looked at the results with the other two people responding, Marika. Did you notice any kind of change? Is there anything that's, I mean, I still see that some of the ones that we talked about that pretty much went one way or the other still go that way, and then a couple of them that were undecided are, you know, or that were close between a no and a yes, like question six, are still pretty much that way.
Yeah, this is Marika again. To be honest, I haven't really put the two next to each other because as we only closed the survey yesterday, I only managed to put everything together today. I just noted that there have been some additional comments added, but as I said, I haven't really paid close attention between the difference between the two versions, but I can do so if you want.
Okay, well, I think, I looked at it really quick, and I didn't really see much. I didn't really see, like, all it did was make the ones that were close, it stayed just as close, and the ones that were one strongly one way or strongly the other way made stronger. It didn't change the results at all, from what I noticed. With that said, do you happen to remember where we left off? I'm trying to scroll through it now.
I think we left off at question 13, if I'm not. We finished, I think, 13, and I think we were at 14, if I'm not wrong. I'm just checking back in my notes because I think I did make a note of it.
Well, I think it would be 16, right? Because I think we covered the entire top. The 15, 14 and 15 are additional comments.
What I have noted here is that we left at question 13.
Ah, okay, sorry. All right.
So, but right, the I don't know if anyone else remembers.
Okay. Well, I think, so 13 was, if anyone's got any comments, I know James is on the phone and not on Adobe, so I'll read the question then. And so 13, 14, and 15 talk about the expedited procedure to be developed for issues that are deemed urgent. So I think what we'll do is on that one, why is it only there's only one response that came out there? Is that right, Marika?
On question 13, I think that was related
to additional
comments on that two parts.
Correct. I looked at the wrong page. I was looking at the wrong page. So, should expedited procedures be available in cases of urgency? And I think the majority of people said yes. There was only one that said no, and there were a few either no strong views either way or something to specify. And so the question was, if you answered yes, the previous question, how should a procedure look? And I think, it's kind of mixed there. One comment was that such a procedure should be determined by the working group. Another one said the council should hold that responsibility unless it's a board-initiated issue. And then another one said the GNSO working in coordination with the staff, other SOs, and the board should decide if it's urgent. I'm noticing that there are a number of comments that do say that the council should have a role. There was one comment that says determined by the working group, and I don't know if that person's on the phone here. Okay, so, but the majority seems to think that it should be dictated by the council or it should be within their purview, and then basically to specify. There were additional comments that were submitted. Let's see. Some questions are very critical, should be reviewed immediately. We talked about how this would be complex on our September 10th call. Something truly urgent can be raised by the board under existing provisions. Burden to be on request to reasonably demonstrate need for the action. And this is part of the management function of the council or some other comments that we had gotten. Does anyone have any other thoughts that are not on here? Okay. Going on to the next topic was the advice from SOs, ACs. And
Jeff, can I ask one question?
Sure.
Because, on this question, there are mixed views and there doesn't seem to be any consensus yet on how such a procedure should look. When do you think would be, do you want me to try to develop something in the first recommendations, or is this maybe an item that should be further discussed in Seoul?
Well, I think we had talked about some parameters of what goes into the complexity and what goes into the decision. We talked about that on September 10th. So there may be some notes to go back from that. But yeah, I think this is a topic that needs to be further addressed and thought about.
Okay.
Didn't seem like there was, although the survey seems to indicate that there's a kind of a strong, well, at least more than a majority feel like there should be. Certainly people recognize it's complex, and so we need to talk about it a little bit more. So starting at question 16 and 17 and 18 are deal with the how to involve advice from other ACs, SOs, and obtain consistent input from the board. So the first question was, should everyone, all these groups, be invited to share their view on whether the council should initiate a PDP or not? I would say that only one person said no. I'd actually be interested to see why that person said no. But the others either said yes or no strong view. So did the person who said no provide a comment? Looking down, not sure I see. Murray, could you see it, or anyone see anything where they said no for rationale behind that?
I think there was only a question if they said yes to provide further details.
Yeah. So that's why I was looking maybe in additional comments whether someone had raised something there. But obviously, so I think in general there was agreement, or at least no strong view. There was an agreement that we recommend that these parties should have some sort of input into the decision as to whether there should be a PDP. I guess the answer is if it's yes, then how should they be presented? And, you know, one person said via formal input statement. Another one said just basically request timely provision of written comment and simply presented and used as the counselors wish, no formal rules. And I guess it's during a public comment period on the issues report, which should be presented to the council. I think they're fairly consistent. So I guess maybe additional comments. One person said, if the issue is raised by an SO or AC, then their position is known. Otherwise, they could comment on the issues report or in any pre-PDP public comment period. So that might be the person that voted no. Okay.
Jeff?
Yeah, Paul?
Hey, it's Paul. Paul Davis, Network Solutions. Yeah, I can't remember. I believe it was my comment. I don't think I necessarily voted no. But all I was getting at here, it wasn't meant to, certainly looking to encourage input. You know, I'm trying to remember, it's too long ago since we did the survey. But I do recognize that first comment is mine. And my thrust, so I was going to note agreement earlier when you said most all the people feel the same. If I was the lone no vote, and I can't remember, that was accidental. You know, the thrust of my comment was really to seek out the opportunity or provide opportunity for people to comment, and certainly EACs, SOs, everyone.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. So unless we hear otherwise, maybe when we write the recommendation in the report, then maybe if you weren't the one that said no, maybe that person will emerge or say something. I think the next couple questions deal with, are there any other questions on that? Next few deal with the evaluate the ICANN staff costs and resources for PDP. And you know, I kind of almost, you know, I really wish Marilyn were on the call because I think this was her kind of, she's the one who really brought up the issue in a lot of different contexts, and it would have been good to get her input on this. And I don't think she one of the ones that responded to the survey or not yet?
No, she hasn't.
Okay. So right now the responses say that ICANN must determine the upper limit for concurrency. Stick to it. It would need multiple mechanisms to raise or lower the priority of a PDP without it dominating all activities or be pushed to the back burner. And for any amount of, or for any of this work, the community must have more confidence in the ICANN calendar. That was one comment. Another comment is should consult with the OSC work team, may need broader community debate on expected workload for staff. Next one said an annual work plan based on longer-term strategic planning, using established norms, best practice for project planning that includes resource allocation management tools, should be used to create a public community viewable master plan. The next comment says there is no system, just a question of structuring the interest represented within the council. Six says that there should be, I just lost my spot here. Council should prioritize issues, but there needs to be a mechanism to question, comment on this prioritization before it's finalized. And seven said it should be an informal process. So I'm not sure anyone get any common themes there. That it says that, but I guess everyone thinks that it's a good idea to understand the resources that are needed and kind of understand that in a broader. Sorry, what was that?
Hi, this is Robin joining.
Oh, hey, Robin.
Hi.
You are, and you're on Adobe, so we're just going through the survey from stage two.
Great, okay.
So we're going to use this survey results to draft the report on stage two, which is kind of the way we've been doing things. We've been going through, talking about the issues, doing a survey, then using the notes from our discussions along with the survey results, and then putting them into a draft report.
Okay.
So we are right now on talking about question 19. I think you can kind of control the document from your end. We're talking about ICANN staff costs and resources needed to conduct a PDP. And I'm trying to draw the common theme from the comments that there should be an understanding overall of where each PDP fits into kind of the annual or the plan, what ICANN staff is working on, and some sort of project management skills to understand whether new PDPs can fit in, how they'd fit in, the priority, who's assigned, and whether the workload, I guess, is kind of realistic for our staff. And I think that's kind of the common theme. Then there was additional comment that said that adding more staff resources is not automatically the answer. Need to consider scope, other community demands, whether other forms may be more appropriate. I think this comment is important because I think this was one of the ones that we raised on our call, which is, you know, aside from staff resources, you can in theory always add more staff. I say in theory, but you could always do that. The problem is that you still have to get community involvement in the PDP process, and I think especially now there's a lot of frustration with the amount of PDPs that are going on and the amount of work that has to be done, not even just PDPs, I would just say anything that's going on in the ICANN community, whether a PDP or just calls for comments, and I think we're all being oversaturated. That's James?
This is James, back in the queue.
Sure, why don't you go, yeah.
Okay, and I know I'm creating a lot of background noise, so I will be brief. But, yeah, Jeff, that's an important point that I wanted to make sure we added to any discussion of workload is this concept of, the available pool of volunteer contributions to PDPs is finite. And we want to make sure that, when we're creating PDPs and, I know you mean to be cavalier when saying, you know, we can hire more staff, but we want to make sure that we're not just contributing to the upward growth of ICANN where they're just continuously adding staff. But, you know, volunteers have to come from somewhere in the community, and I think that when we get to a certain point where this is a part-time or a full-time job to manage all the PDPs and comments and other activities, I think that's an important consideration when we start talking about workload. And I'll go back on mute now so everybody can hear one another.
Okay, thanks, James. And that is that was actually the second comment that was filed in the additional comments as well, that the other side of the coin is the volunteers. That may have been your comment. Paul?
Thanks, Jeff. Question for the group. That third point in the first part where it asks, should consult with OSC work team, do we have any insight into what the OSC team is thinking, what they're thinking is on this particular issue?
This is Marika, and I've asked my colleagues on the OSC team, and as far as they are aware, that issue is not on their agenda for now. They haven't looked at prioritization, and especially not in relation to PDPs or anything like that.
Okay, so in other words, they don't think it's necessarily part of their charter, or rather they just haven't gotten to it yet?
As I understand, I think at this point they don't consider it part of their charter. But I guess, you know, if this group would make a call for that, you know, it might be something that can be added. But I would advocate, I think, as you know, PDPs are a specific kind of breed, and, you know, I would strongly recommend this group to look at this issue very carefully and come up with some kind of recommendation on this, because I think we're all very much aware that there's too much going on, and I fully support what James was saying. Yes, of course, you can add staff resources, but I think the real question is community overload, and we're really seeing that people are getting spread thin, and you know, we're challenged in getting the work done just because so much is going on at the same time. So I would just encourage the group to really closely look at this question and see if there's any kind of resolution that could be offered.
No problem. Then thank you. And I would just offer, Jeff, if, as you've tried to summarize, you know, or distill the key points that come out of the comments made, to underscore, you know, those two additional comments, because there seems to be plenty of concurrence there, and also to note that our group, this particular group, addressed it, but we were not expecting the OSC group to, so that down the road nobody can say, wait a minute, why were you doing this? And the other group, we're trying to move forward and be constructive. I think something to that effect should be in our draft report, that we decided to take the lead on this.
Okay. So do we have, on this topic, do we have thoughts on how this is accomplished, right? Because, so if you go back to some of the previous topics that we talked about, which all bear this relationship, right, there were a number of people, and some of them are not on the call now, but there were a number of people that did not want PDPs to be delayed. They were afraid that, you know, at different stages that, you know, whether it's the issues report, we talked about this particular issue kind of in every single area, whether it's stage one, stage two, stage three, and it always got to the point where people weren't able to come to a consensus, because there was, on the one hand, the view that if there's an issue that needs to be raised, we don't want to prevent it from going to a PDP. We want to allow flexibility, though. But then there was the notion of, we don't want things to drag on forever. So we need to kind of reconcile all of those concepts, whereas, you know, at different stages, for example, we said, well, what if there's already 10 PDPs going on? How long could the council could delay voting on whether to issue a PDP? And we talked about that. And we talked about, you know, but that has to be bound by some period of time. So you kind of get into these things where we say, well, we don't want that to last longer than 90 days, but what if there's already too much going on? So we need to kind of balance all of those at every stage to make sure that PDPs that need to happen are happening, but also balance the need that what we've just been talking about, that there's just a limited amount of resources. This is kind of a big topic, and I think it's something we should think about and maybe try to brainstorm for ideas. I don't know, maybe it's a topic in Seoul that we address. Any thoughts on that? All right, we'll jot that down.
Jeff, this is James. I wanted to say, and I apologize, I don't have a place where I could raise my hand, but I wanted to say that I agree completely. I think that it is a balance. When you stand back a little bit and look at a PDP, you know, in and of itself, this can be a year-long commitment. You know, I think some of us who are familiar with Congress, you know, that would say that even government moves a lot faster than some of the PDCs are able to work themselves through the system. So I think balancing workload, but making sure that things don't pile up or get queued up. And I think one of the concerns that a lot of folks have about PDCs getting delayed is because they recognize that it takes so long to get one through the system that any delay at the front end can translate into months at the back end. So I think that's probably what's driving a lot of the concern for delays. But it's, right. I agree it's a good topic for Seoul.
Okay, good. And the other thing we have to remember is that if there's a PDP, it's usually because it's important to either, to at least one group of people, if not more. So that group of people that want this issue, whatever it is, resolved, they certainly want – they're not going to be the ones that want to hear that, I'm sorry, yours is not deemed as important as the others going on, and we're going to push you to the back of the queue. So that's I agree with that. And let's why don't we move on a little bit to the next question and kind of flag that one, Marika? I think that's flagged along with the urgency. I think those are two good topics that are still kind of still need to be more flushed out.
Okay.
The next one's an easy question. At least I think it's easy because everyone responded yes to it, and that's it all relates to options the council should have at its disposal to ensure that it can make an informed decision as to whether to initiate a PDP. First question is, should the council be allowed to invite experts and or interested parties to provide additional information and or answer questions on the issue? And everyone said yes. It's fairly an easy question, but I don't think the council has really accepted a face-to-face. I'm not aware of too many instances where the council actually invites input from anyone at its meetings. I mean, other than ICANN staff, right? It's very rare that I've seen the council actually. And Robin, you're on the council. Have you noticed any in the years that you were on the council? Did you notice any GNSO ever really inviting any experts in? Okay, well, we may have lost Robin. I think I was on the council for a year. I didn't notice that happening at all. And frankly, was always kind of surprised that the council doesn't even invite the chairs of the working groups or work teams in to its meeting to give an update. It really relies on the liaisons to do that. I'm not sure if that's a good or a bad idea. They do ask the chairs to produce some sort of statement as to where they are in their process, and maybe that's enough, but usually I have not really seen them invite others in. Question 22, should the council be allowed to defer a vote if it feels that there are still questions that need to be answered before it can take an informed decision on whether to initiate PDP or not? And I believe we talked a lot about this in previous meetings, and I think the answer reflects that. I think the answer was yes from 91% of the people responding said yes. In fact, I think it was on the last call that we talked about, or the call before that, where we talked about there should be, as of right, an opportunity to defer a vote one meeting without really necessarily asking for or giving justification. But if they ask for a deferral on the second meeting, that we wanted some substantiation of that in the form of questions that still need to be resolved or some sort of substantial justification for it. So I think that represents what we've talked about. And anyone, please feel free to raise your hand or interrupt if you have questions. The next several deal with public comment periods after the initiation of a PDP. And I think here we've talked about this on a number of occasions. Are the provisions in the bylaws still relevant? And I think we had a number that said yes, a number that said no. And the comments that came in, I mean, 64% of people said yes, the rest said no or other. And the additional comments that we received were, if the issues report is open for comment and the PDP working groups call for comments as an early function of their life cycle, then there's already sufficient opportunity to submit comments, and these periods are redundant. comment.
Jeff, this is James, and that was, I think, that was my comment. I think that what I was getting at was just it seemed like the first thing after a PDP working group is formed, the first order of business is to get input and to launch a public comment phase. And I just felt that that was, you know, it just seemed redundant for possibly if there was an issues report that was released and that had a comment period, or if there's a draft or an interim report due, that that's going to have a comment period. So it just seemed like there were a lot of comment periods stacked up on the front end. I'll drop back on mute now.
Thanks, James. I think, and actually you pick up a good point, because I maybe have been one of the ones that answered yes in the sense of that's kind of what I was thinking, and maybe it's others that said yes too. I think we discussed, or I know we discussed, that one of the, as you just said, one of the first items for business for the working group is to do that call for comments. I think the bylaws state that it's before the working group actually comes to meet. And I think there may have been some confusion on the question. I think, and if anyone that answered yes other than myself, I certainly agree with that notion, James, that one of the first items of business should be the call for comments, but the working group can meet first to talk about what specifically they want to solicit from that first call for comments. And I think the bylaws should reflect that as opposed to just mandating that 15 days after the vote or whatever it says, after the vote for to initiate the PDP, there should be a public comment period. So I think it's kind of, yes, there should be a public comment period at the outset, but that should be called for by the working group after, you know, as one of its first items up for discussion. Does that kind of summarize where I think we've been? And Paul's
set? Yes, I agree with that, Jeff, as well. Good summary.
Marika, you got that?
Yep.
Great.
Yeah, this is James. I agree, and then I also would like to see something in there about that call for comment, that initial one that's right off the bat is also a solicitation for additional volunteers.
So there'll be a solicitation for volunteers that's usually sent out by the council. And usually posted, and you're saying that, okay, then the working group meets and then should do further outreach efforts to get more participation in that call.
Yeah, and I don't mean to take us off track. I'm just saying that if folks feel, you know, strongly and they want to get involved in the comments, so that's a good opportunity. It's a working group still in an early stage. But you know, whether that needs to be reflected in the bylaws is a different story, but it certainly seems like a good opportunity to do that.
Yeah, okay. I think we can reflect that. We are on question 26, clarification of in scope. And we talked about this a lot, so this is hopefully just a refresher. Does in scope relate to ICANN's mission and GTLDs, or does it relate to consensus policy? How should this be clarified? And see the basically a reference to the file. Oh, am I coming out with an echo?
Hello. Is there someone that's not on mute? Is everyone still we're still getting this echo. Is everyone still there?
Yeah, Jeff, that's better now.
Okay, good. I switched to my handset just in case it was my phone, too. All right, so the answers in this are basically needs to be consistent with what we proposed for stage one. Both various subjects may be outside ICANN's mission and may not be applicable to consensus policies. I think where the group came out, at least on our discussions, were that you could have a PDP on anything within the GNS, well, it's got to be within ICANN's mission, but also GNSO mission, but that at some point there needs to be clarification in the process as to whether something that's being discussed by the working group is something that's ultimately going to be within the scope of a consensus policy if that's kind of where the group's heading. In other words, if the group's heading towards proposing something for a registry or a registrar to do, and we talked about this in stage three, is that ICANN staff, whether it's general counsel or policy staff, should be available to answer questions as to whether something they're thinking about would be within the scope of a consensus policy. But I think we all agreed that in scope, at least with respect to a whether to do a PDP or not, is in scope with ICANN's mission and the GNSO, as opposed to the picket fence. Does anybody disagree with that? And Marika, I think this is going to be an important part of the paper because I know that there's a lot of people in the community, including within the registries, certainly registries and registrars that may not understand this point, and I'm sure within other communities as well. So I think it's something that's going to be important to really be specific on.
Okay.
And even specific in a recommended bylaw change to make it clear that a PDP is with respect to what's in scope of the of ICANN, obviously, and the GNSO. I think that reaches the end of the survey.
Yeah, Jeff, can I just raise a point? It's Paul?
Yeah, oh, sure, absolutely, yeah.
Just to your last point, that is such an important issue. I would suggest this might be added to your short list of topics for discussion in Seoul, because the debate that this particular group may have will carry over into all the other policy work that's underway, because I think you're absolutely right. This is so often misunderstood, and it would be probably a good opportunity at the Seoul meeting to, you know, kind of clear out the smoke and make sure it's well understood by everyone.
Okay, and I think if Margie were here, she would say that she actually gave a presentation in Sydney. No, was it Sydney or Mexico? I'm forgetting the venues now. But she gave a presentation on that difference. I'm not sure how well attended it was. I'm trying to remember. But I think it always helps to bring that up, especially when we talk about the draft report for stage two. I think that's certainly an area that we should call out, because I think you're right. It is. Yes.
This is Marika, because one point this group might want to make to the working group work team is that for PDP working groups, maybe it should be a requirement to have at the beginning of, you know, when they are formed, to sit through one of those presentations on what is in scope of consensus policies, what is in scope for ICANN's mission, to have a clear understanding, because I don't think we completely solve the confusion by just clarifying this language. I think there needs to be a little bit more education as well at the start of a working group, at, you know, what does it mean for it to be a consensus policy, and when can you actually enforce a consensus policy, which topics fall in that, you know, picket fence that we always talk about. So that might be an element that this group might need to communicate or recommend to the working group work team to incorporate that in their working group guidelines and take it into account.
I think that's a good idea. I think, you know, oftentimes we hear, and I've sat in on some of the calls of the abuse, the registration abuse working group, and oftentimes when someone says something, there are some registries or registrars that get on there and say, well, you can't enforce that because that's not within the picket fence. And I guess the response to that should be, well, we can still make a recommendation. Whether it's enforceable as a consensus policy is one thing, but we can still make the recommendation as a recommended practice. And, you know, whether it could be enforced on someone is a wholly separate question.
Jeff, can I offer a follow-up?
Sure.
Absolutely agree with it. It is Paul again. Absolutely agree with everything you're saying. And I can't recall. I was not in Sydney, so I think that's when Margie did the presentation. I remember reading the transcript about it, but not seeing it. What I might offer is, Marika, take it back to staff. In the interest of better educating the community, somebody ought to videotape the presentation, even do it outside of the ICANN meeting, and then have it posted so that it's available for anybody, anytime, anywhere. Obviously, the PDPs are not necessarily going to coincide. Starting a new process won't coincide with the international meeting. So new participants to the process may not have the benefit of being able to sit in on one of those and kind of orient themselves. If it's available as a short, make it a 10-15 minute overview, it's there forever, and it will improve or burnish ICANN's commitment, in quotations, commitment for greater transparency of process.
And this is Marika. To respond to that, we're actually currently in the process of putting together a number of short webinars as well to explain on what policy issues are going on and give people some more in-depth information. And I think it's a great idea to add that to the list. I do believe that Margie's presentation is available because she did do it also for the Registration Abuse Policies Working Group. So it is somewhere in the files. It is already recorded, but I think we can probably do something nice with the video and have her give it again. So because I do believe it's very important that understanding is communicated.
Good. I think that's a really good suggestion. Okay. Any other thoughts on that? Okay, great. So, Marika, I think we have everything we need to go to a draft on stage two, and whatever you can do, whether it's just an outline or, partial, something that we could kind of look at and discuss at the meeting, I think that would be great. And I think, again, that along with the survey on stage three should give us enough topics to talk about it in Seoul. Speaking of stage three, do you have that prep to come back up on the screen?
Yes, if you give me 2 seconds.
Great. I'm trying to figure out what we still need to cover from here. I think, that's right, we skipped ahead. What we did is we talked about the outputs of working groups, and I think we jumped to number 10 because number 10 kind of helped with talking about public comment periods, which is back at question number 5, and which is question number 5. Right, so just to recap what we talked about the last time, because I think, again, it's useful to remember that so we can go back to some of these other questions. It was, what are the appropriate outputs? We talked about whether draft reports, initial reports. We talked about the terminology. And what we came up with was that an initial report would be put out before the working group does any work at all, and is meant to set the path of the charter questions and frame the deliberations on the group. A second type is an interim report, which may or may not have initial recommendations for the public to consider. And the third being a draft final report, which contains the recommendations and is at the end of the process, essentially gives the public an opportunity to weigh in prior to the working group concluding. And then the last report is the final report. And it was pointed out that the current bylaws do not prohibit a working group to hold additional public comment periods on specific questions or comments than the initial report.
And this is Marika, if I can add one point, because I think the group did discuss, or I don't know if there was consensus or agreement, that possibly the only output that would be mandatory would be number 3 and 4, with 1 and 2 being optional.
Right. I think yes, and 1 was, it says an initial report, and that the terminology was meant to cover anything, as it says later on. If there are certain questions, focused questions that the working group wants answered for public input, that's what that was meant to address. And again, that's kind of tied to what we were talking about when the working group launches. Just earlier on, we were talking about with the survey questions. In phase 2, it's that one of the first outputs of the working group could be this what's here called an initial report may not actually be a report, but maybe just a list of questions that you want public comment on. So those are kind of the four, with three and four being mandatory, one and two being suggested or possibilities or alternatives. If you go back to number five, which is when should there be public comments and how do you kind of write that in the bylaws, we talked about public comments generally being 30 days. Actually, I don't know if we finished that discussion. I don't know if people weighed in. I think we said 30 days sounded reasonable, and no one kind of presented any other alternative as to whether that was too short or too long. And so the public comment periods, Marika, I think when we do this up, 5 and 10 are really related, and we'll have to figure out how to write that into the bylaws.
Okay.
So we finished on those, and now it comes down to number 6, which is the implementation. Actually, I'm sorry, I wanted to jump to number 8.
Jeff, 1 second, because we didn't finish 5. For 5, we only covered one of the questions that were outlined on the duration. There were a number of other questions. I don't know, maybe you want to do those later, but there were a couple of other ones that we didn't specifically address.
Oh, right. I'm sorry. You're right. I was already thinking of the reason I was kind of jumping to number 8 is because number 8 talks about constituency statements, which are also in the bylaws, and I kind of wanted to group them together before we go back to 5 before the workshop. So number 8 calls for is on constituency statements, and it, and what happens is there, I believe that there's constituency statements at the in the current bylaws. It says that, let me read this here. Can you guys help me out, Marika? The current bylaws call for a constituency statement right at the beginning, right, with the initial public comment period, correct?
I think that's correct.
So the general question is, and this is only on the timing, should we merge the two concepts? Anytime there's a public comment period, there's also a call for constituency statements during that public comment period, and just group them together, or should they be treated separately?
This is Marika, because I don't know the answer to this one, but I have been wondering as well, because we now have a situation where in certain public comment periods, constituencies actually submit their constituency statements in the same spot. And the issue is then that certain constituency statements get summarized together with the other public comments while others don't. So personally, I would advocate maybe indeed doing everything together or clearly separated. So the question, I guess, where it comes down to in the end, like, do constituency statements have a different value than normal public comments? Should it be treated and reviewed in a different way, in a different light, because they do represent a whole constituency, while public comments are made by individuals? Mm-hmm. So is that a reason for a working group to review those separately? And I think that's an approach that most working groups take now most of the time as well, because constituency statements tend to come in later than the first public comment period. So that's some of the questions the group probably will need to consider.
So, but, all right. So let's. There are a couple things there. If we can just stick to the timing part of it and not, and then address the weight of those. I think maybe elsewhere, but just for timing purposes, my initial thought that I'll throw out is: does that delay the process even further if you have two separate public comment periods, one after the other? And let me. James has his hand raised, so let me turn it over to James.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. This is James. And very quickly, just this is getting to my earlier comment in stage two, I believe, regarding the redundant or overlapping comment periods. And I think that any opportunity we would have to just include constituency statements with the public comments would be would just help to shorten the whole process.
And would you just ask the question, do you think constituencies need a longer time period than the public?
You know,
maybe?
I can't speak to other constituencies. I know that I'm, you know, having participated in generating the registrar constituency statement while at the same time working on an individual statement on behalf of GoDaddy, I think that it just strikes me that, you know, those could be done in the same comment period.
Okay. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to answer your previous question on whether there's a comment period should, you know, whether there shouldn't delay the process, but actually now they are running in parallel. But often the constituencies request or need more time, or the practice of you know, recent working groups, partly as well because a lot of stuff is going on at the same time. And, of course, in the public comment period, an individual can decide whether they want to submit something or not, while constituencies are often, you know, requested or expected to provide some input. So they often need more time to deliberate also because they have a larger group to consult with and come to agreement to, which, you know, is not the case with normally with individual comments.
So if we said then, if we had a recommendation that said something like public comment period should be at least 30 days, the working group can obviously always can extend that, or, well, I made an assumption there, but let's just for this part go, the working group can extend that, but that we basically combine, the public comment period is for any individual group or stakeholder group or supporting organization for that matter. Right? I mean, there's in 5B, question 5B or 5C, I think, talks about, you know, ACs and SOs. I mean, should we just have one public comment period that may be extended, at least 30 days, may be extended by the working group for any public comments, including stakeholder group, SOs, or AC comments, and maybe have also the rule that the council adopted that if the comment period falls in a time in which, within a certain number of days in which there is a public meeting, that the comment period gets extended, whatever that rule is?
This is Marika, because I do have a question. Do you then, you know, do you want everything then as well, like it currently happens, end up in the same place, basically? So there's one email address to which everyone sends a public comment, and they all get summarized all together? That's what you have in mind, just to clarify?
Well, if you're going towards the weight, I mean it's for staff to collect, so that's up to you guys to where you want to collect it. Ultimately, as long as you know, and there's a format for a stakeholder group statement, which I think we're going to go into in a little bit. As long as staff knows who it's coming from, you guys, you let us know. Is it helpful to get it to different addresses? I mean, I think it's a different question than the weight each one is given.
This is Marika again. I mean, just more out of, you know, practical experience, constituencies normally, you know, do provide responses to all the charter questions, or, you know, when we provide the template, which sometimes makes it easier to, you know, review those all together separately, while, you know, public comments can be from two lines to, you know, 10 pages. So if you take that all together, I think from a staff perspective, it might mean more challenging to have that all in the same spot instead of separating that out and, you know, having those delivered to the secretariat and dealt with in a separate way. But it's more of a practical matter than anything else.
Well, I have no problem with that recommendation. Does anyone have any thoughts on that recommendation?
Another issue that might be considered in that extent, because if you limit it to 30 days, because, you know, we normally do give constituencies, you know, they can request on working group meetings or in council calls if they need more time, because I think for most working groups it's very important to have the input of constituencies. So, for example, in post-expiration, we've, you know, extended it with another month because people needed more time. Of course, if you do that with a public comment period, if you link the two together, you know, you might run into a situation where you're extending and extending with, you know, no real stop, which normally is easier with public comments where you just say, okay, that's the deadline, and there's strong demand, or, you know, people really indicate that individuals want to provide input.
So I think just for ease, though, without being too overly complicated, is there any harm with, you know, opening it up for others to make comments in the public, just as you would the stakeholder group? Like, I don't understand what the harm is of saying the public comment period for everyone is extended 30 days or whatever it is. Is there a harm?
No, I mean, it's already open for everyone. I mean, my question to you is actually, because do you just mean that you still run separate processes, or do you mean that everyone goes into the same process? That's my question.
Oh, I guess the way I interpreted what we talked about was it's the same process, it's the same opening of comment periods, same closing of comment periods, but I just understood your discussion being they just submit different things to different addresses. So if it's a public comment, an ordinary public comment, it goes to one address, but if it's a formal stakeholder group or constituency statement, that goes somewhere else. But it's one opening of the public comment period to anyone.
If I can just make one other comment there, because if you want to open everything at the same time, because we normally develop separate announcements and templates, and in practice I've seen normally it goes quicker to have the public comment period open than it takes to go through the constituency statement template. So I would just like to advocate that there's some kind of flexibility at least there where, you know, if one thing is already ready to go, that it doesn't necessarily hold up the other process. Because in certain cases, working groups might want to take the opportunity to ask more specific questions to constituencies on certain issues where they know they'll might get more information than in the public comment period. So just would like to avoid that we get too stringent on it. It should all be go at the same time and all for 30 days and that's it.
Okay, let me throw out the question. How do you balance that with the desire to avoid delay and someone interpreting it, okay, we'll have the public comment period first, then we'll do a call for constituency statements, and then instead of having a 30-day comment period between the two, now you have 60 or 90 days.
No, but I don't mean that you wait with the other one. You just say each of those is 30 days, but they don't necessarily need to all start at the same starting point. It might be that the constituency statement call goes out 10 days after you've launched the general public comment period. That's what I mean.
Is that getting complex? I mean, with multiple PDPs going on at once, having all these different dates for the same thing, it's just a question.
It's how it currently runs, but if people feel that's too confusing and too many things going on, because, you know, I understand James's point as well, where you're, as your own company or organization, are submitting comments, and at the same time, you know, you have to do constituency statements as well. You know, if it's better to do that at the same time or have some more time in between, or I don't know.
Well, this is the first time I've just out of, you know, I've been doing this for PDPs now for a number of years, and this is the first time I've heard that it's not the same deadline. I always just assumed it was always the same deadline. Maybe because you guys don't really close the public comment period for a little while after, so maybe I'm just always late with individual ones, but on time for constituency ones.
Well, one of the reasons why often the public comment period at the beginning of a working group is run quicker, because officially the bylaws say that should be initiated, I think, 10 or 15 days after initiation of the PDP. So normally we try to speed that up a bit to at least stay, you know, a little bit close to the bylaws, while on the constituency statement is more like when the working group is formed, then is when you're supposed to ask for constituency statements. And you know, sometimes working groups spend a little bit more time on, you know, defining the questions they would like to ask if they want to have more details, and there's, you know, sometimes more time. So that's why it has happened like that.
So just to tie it, though, to previous conversations, I think we said that one of the first items of business for a working group is to decide how it wants to structure the public comment period, the initial one, and what questions it wants to ask, and maybe that's just added to the agenda of the initial item is, you know, and do they want to ask separate things of constituency stakeholder groups? I mean, I think my fear is that I don't want to become overly complex I want to make it as simple as possible as opposed to having different dates for different groups to the extent you can. If you can combine it all into one thing, just make it an action item of the initial action item of the working group, and have them delineate what goes out to constituency, stakeholder groups, or individuals. I think that leaves them with the flexibility to do what with it as they want, but make the note that it should be done as contemporaneously as possible.
No, and I absolutely agree with that. I think as long as there's flexibility, I don't think there's any issue.
Okay. And I'm assuming the same thing that we've been talking about applies to SOs and ACs as well. Anyone think that they should be treated differently than stakeholder groups or constituencies or individuals?
And this is Marika. Maybe I guess this is more for a working group to consider. You know, on a specific issue, they might consider reaching out to a certain SO or AC that they think might have, you know, valuable input. I don't think it's, you know, you can make that a requirement, but it may be something to, you know, if we develop any kind of guidebook or recommendations, that might be something to point out to a PDP working group and saying, well, you know, if there are specific issues, you know, you should feel free to go out and, you know, approach either ICANN organizations or bodies outside of ICANN to provide input if you think that they can provide valuable information to, you know, to the deliberations of the group.
And on that, can I ask as an action item, Marika, that you check or have someone check with the GAC principals and communiques to make sure that they didn't ask for, to make sure we're considering what they need for their input? Because they may have made some recommendations. I seem to recall recommendations in the past that may have asked for certain time frames and certain when to be made aware of certain issues and things.
I'll look into that.
I don't know.
Jeff?
Yeah.
It's Paul. Just to follow with what you said about the GAC, I don't remember the specifics, but I do remember that they've often asked for significantly more time than the rest of the community participants. They claim it's a result of, you know, the coordination process that they have to go through. Just understand that if we want a one-size-fits-all, then that might go to the lowest common denominator. The GAC's time frame, which will stretch out processes pretty dramatically.
Yeah, that's why I asked Marika to check, and because they may have said like a full meeting, like a full, that we need to allow for a certain period of time plus a full meeting, I think is, I'm trying to remember what they said.
Yeah,
but
I wanted to say it was like 6 months, so what you're suggesting, a full meeting and then some time, the equivalent of 6 months, I think that was what they were seeking.
So I think you're right in the sense that catering to the lowest common denominator is probably not, although I don't want the transcript to
absolutely agree. I don't mean that pejoratively.
Yeah.
Don't absolutely agree. Don't mean it pejoratively. It's just the government guys necessarily, and you know, we can, I think we should call this out in our report. It's recognized that the government representatives necessarily have a longer time frame that they operate in due to their own coordination processes.
Right, that we recognize this, but we do not believe that waiting for GAC input should hold up the work of the group, but merely should be considered when received.
Sure, that sounds fine.
And I think, but with the other ACs, I don't necessarily see that. I don't see that for the at-large, and I don't see that for the ESSEC. Okay, going back, I know we're kind of jumping, but I think those were all kind of related. The 5A, C, and 8. If we go back to 5B, should a public workshop to provide an update on the status of work be part of a PDP to solicit public input? Does anyone have any thoughts on that? I mean, it sounds like a great idea. The question I have is, what if the public workshop doesn't, I guess we could, Marika, could a public workshop be a webinar?
Don't know why not.
Because initially when I thought of public workshop, I thought of in-person at an ICANN meeting, and then was initially thinking, well, that may not be, you know, may not coincide with the time periods, but certainly a webinar could be done as part of a process to elicit public input. I think that, personally, I think that would be valuable. James?
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. This is James. And Well, I'm not necessarily down on the idea of public workshops. I just think that their maximum value tends to occur in the beginning of a PDP, where you can kind of lay out the issues and take some real-time comments from the community, and then whether that's in face-to-face or through a webinar, and then also use that as an opportunity to get interested folks to participate. But I'm thinking about this just in terms of being something that occurs later on in the process. I think the value decreases as the PDP goes along.
Well, let me test that a little bit. What about if the group wanted to, and then I'll go to Marika, what about if the group wanted to test out solutions with the public, a webinar, and say, here, these are our proposed solutions. What do you guys think of this?
I think that could be interesting, but and I'm open to the idea that new ideas would come from that workshop that weren't touched on with the working group. But if the working group has done its job, you know, thoroughly and comprehensively, I think a lot of those bases would have already been covered. And then with the workshop, you open up the opportunity that you're going to revisit a lot of topics that were in the rearview mirror of the working group when you started the workshop. So, but I can see there's some benefits to that. I just think the maximum benefit comes at the beginning.
Okay, and last question, then I will go to Marika. Would you recommend a public workshop, whenever it is, would you say that it's required that the working group has one? Would you say it's optional, or would you say it's recommended?
I would put it in the optional category, not even recommended. But that's just, you know, shooting from the hip.
Okay.
And I should mention that I have some PDP experiences in mind when I'm saying this. So, you know, maybe that's not a representative sample of how a workshop could go. But just in my experience, that the value comes at the beginning. And if you open that up at the end, you run the risk of kind of circling back and reopening a lot of discussions that maybe the working group either has or should have had throughout the process.
Okay. Hey, Marika?
Yeah, listen, Marika, I just wanted to comment on what James said earlier and something that we've been doing for some of the PDP is currently ongoing, where we indeed in the beginning of, at the start of the meeting, had like a brainstorming session, which indeed where the idea was like for people to throw out ideas to take into consideration for the working group on, you know, how to do their job or certain issues or items they might want to consider, you know, as well an opportunity to throw out possible solutions or ideas, and also being used as a recruitment tool. So it's something that we've been trying out a bit already.
Well, let me ask: is there anyone? Let me do a little poll. does everyone in this group agree that it should be at least optional, or that each working group should have the option of having a workshop or webinar during, I guess, their working group's tenure, that it should be an option for them? I'm waiting for hands to come up. It seems like everyone agrees that, or at least people responding all agree. Robin's got her hand raised. Robin, is that a hand raised for agree or hand raised that you want to speak? Agree. Okay. So it seems like everyone agrees that it should be at least optional. Now, how about she can't. Okay. Thanks, Robin. Now let me go a step, because I actually think it's interesting to explore whether we should say it's recommended during a public comment period to hold the webinar as just another avenue for people to get their thoughts out. So let me ask that question. Would anyone say that it should be recommended that during a public comment period there should be a workshop or webinar, wherever it falls? Does anyone agree with that? Okay. James does not agree with that.
So would you say it again, Jeff?
So the question is, so we already said it should be an option for a working group to have, right? That there should be a public workshop or a
webinar,
depending, you know, where if it falls, right? If it falls between two meetings, then mm-hmm. it probably may not be the public workshop, but just the webinar. The question I have is, so we have it at least optional. The question is, do people believe it should be recommended, that it should be like a best practice to have a workshop or webinar? Does anyone agree that it should be a best practice? And Paul and James are saying no. Anyone else have any thoughts on that?
Jeff, this is James.
Okay, James, yes.
Yeah, I feel like I should at least, you know, justify that disagreement, which is the idea that a workshop should be, you know, in the toolkit, if you will, for a working group. But I think that once you say that it's recommended, then I don't see how it's going to not be used in every single PDP and in some cases where it may or may not be optimally appropriate. And I think that then it falls to the working group to explain or justify why they didn't use this particular tool that's in their toolkit. So I think just saying that, you know, it's one of the tools or one of the options that's available without, you know, recommending it or without prohibiting it, and then just kind of leave it to the working groups to situationally decide if it fits their needs.
Okay. Well, just to play devil's advocate, right? What if it's recommended that the working group present their solution or present whatever it is to explain to people during the public comment period so that people could better base their comments based on hearing from the group, their rationale? And so let me, there have been some groups that I've been on, whether they're formal policy groups or other groups, that it may have helped to actually present the report that goes out for comment so that people could understand where we were coming from and ask questions about it to formulate their comments. Does that change your mind, or you still think it's just optional? And
Sorry, James. No, go ahead, Paul.
I was just going to follow up with, I think we're all thinking along the same lines, Jeff, but I agree with James that it should remain optional.
Okay.
On the part of the working group. The working group, if the experts, the people who are immersed in it, anticipate that there will be confusion, that there is a benefit to it, they certainly have the option to do it. But I agree with James, if you offer it up as a best practice, that's basically, I can't speak for it, you better do it, or justify why you didn't. And using your analogy, in some recent PDPs that I've been part of, if there was any such requirement later on, it would very likely have just raised even more questions, concerns, dragged the process out. If the working group felt that, you know, we use a particular one, fast flux. I mean, we were just pushing at the end to get this done. It was a difficult issue, and we just wanted to wrap it up. If there was any sense of that there's an obligation to now have a webinar or a public meeting, it just opens up all sorts of cans of worms again, and it would have been detrimental. Giving the option, just leaving it as an option for the working group, for the chair and the participants in the group to say, look, we will benefit from it. Great, go ahead and do it. But let's not write it in any way as a best practice or certainly a requirement, because it's probably going to create more problems than it helps solve.
Okay. James and Marika?
Yeah, and I just wanted to chime in a little bit with the idea that if it seems as though I'm being limiting to workshops or even earlier comments about opening things up for multiple comment periods, I understand that there's opportunities for clarification, but my concern is that, you know, if there are folks that are feeling that they're closed out of the process, I mean, that's more of an incentive to get involved and join the PDP and join the working group. I think that, these are open to, as far as I'm aware, they're open to everyone from any constituency or stakeholder group. So it's this idea that, you know, continuing to go back to the community, whether it's through workshop or public comments, is commendable and should always be a part of the PDP, but there should be some recognition or acknowledgement that the folks who are doing this on a weekly basis and investing their time, are doing so with the expectation that they're being trusted to represent, a certain segment of the community to some degree, and that, you know, if we were to throw something open to a public comment or to a workshop and end up circling back to where we were, let's say, in question one, stage one, that that somewhat is a diminishment of the work that, that transpired to that date. So I just kind of wanted to put that out there since we were playing devil's advocate earlier.
Sure. No, I think it's good. I think, and I'm just kind of just trying to challenge and see if there's any other avenues that people might ask. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. I wanted to point out as well, because if you would do it, you know, simultaneously, the public comment period, is, you know, the workshop or webinar is part of the public comment period, a challenge there might be is that often there are very general comments or questions put out during a public comment period. And in order to run a workshop with some kind of valuable output, you'll really need to structure it and probably provide more substance as well on what is the issue about. And because, you know, I see value there to some extent, maybe as well at the part at the start of a public comment period, because what you do often see is that people submit comments that are not really related to the issue, or they think it's related, but, you know, those that have more experience or knowledge about the issue realize that it's, you know, not in scope of the working group. So another idea that might be considered that you provide the opportunity for people to participate in a webinar at the start of a public comment period to explain the issue in more detail and, you know, maybe then as well have an opportunity for people to already provide inputs. But just having a webinar and, you know, asking the same questions, I'm not sure how much value would get out of that without, you know, either asking specific questions or, you know, that the working group has discussed within their discussions already or talking about solutions. So it will, I think, require a little bit more thinking of a working group, how to frame that and how to best make use of a webinar or workshop as part of a public comment period.
I think that's really helpful. I think if we do make, say, it's an option, we should provide that kind of background, Marika, as well. The next question on here is the first 5D, I think there's two 5Ds, which is how to expand the information available related to a PDP. And I believe is this referred to like expert comments, or I'm trying to remember what this one refers to. To expand the information available related to a PDP.
This is Marika. I'm reading it now. Maybe that was one of the comments made in one of our discussions. Maybe that's a question that relates to specific research. I mean, if there's specific information that a group realizes they would like to have, how can you, you know, solicit or try to get that kind of information? You know, if a group identifies certain types of research, or I guess it relates maybe as well to question five. If you know that there's a group out there that, you know, might be really valuable in providing their feedback or their experiences on a certain issue, maybe C and D are related in that sense. So
yeah.
I don't exactly recall why those two are separated.
Yeah, I think that's it. I mean, I think what we talked about is the working group should always be free to, I think the working group work team talked about this, is to get expert opinion. So I think that's more, I guess the group could always tailor questions to a particular audience if it wanted to. I think that's kind of part of their flexibility. Like, we reached out to the IETF to figure out some of their procedures, and we reached out to the World Wide Web Consortium as well. Let me go ahead to question 5F, which is, should we provide guidance on how to review and incorporate public comments received? And my first thought on that is, I think we just need to look towards the affirmation of commitments document. It talks about how to, that ICANN should be doing a better job in, or that ICANN commits to doing a better job in incorporating comments, and has some pretty good language in there about what to do with comments, and both comments that it accepts and comments that it doesn't accept, and providing a detailed explanation. I mean, I think we can borrow some language from there. I know Christina Rosette usually, this is one of her pet peeves that she talks about a lot, is that oftentimes groups have these public comment periods, but they don't explain why they do, or mostly why they don't, take certain opinions. And certainly one of my pet peeves as well is when ICANN doesn't necessarily take a comment, it doesn't explain why it does not. Any thoughts on that? Paul?
Thanks, Jeff. Yeah, I certainly agree with that and think the citing the affirmation commitments is probably fine. Would probably want to underscore also that the working group sort of has an implicit obligation to review and incorporate public comment inputs into their deliberations. I know in the last couple groups that I've been part of or that are ongoing, we've really bent over backwards to try and do this. So it's not an issue, but making it explicit is probably a good idea. That said, I wouldn't want to go too far and try to start defining for working groups and their chairs, how to do this. It's probably more than enough just to make reference to the overall transparency commitment and to just underscore that, working groups should do this as a part of their regular business.
Well, do we go further and say that working groups must do this as opposed to should? Should is, it's recommended that they do that, but I'm thinking because it's so deeply rooted in ICANN's mission that a working group has an obligation to discuss why it did not include certain concepts. Or is that too burdensome? Let me take a poll on that. So let's do the poll. There are three options, right? The first option is whether let me go back. Try this again. Three possibilities. First possibility that all is that that the working groups may respond or may provide a detailed explanation behind why it did or did not accept comments. The second option is a working group should explain why it did or did not incorporate certain comments. And the third one is a working group must explain why it did or did not accept certain comments. So those are the three options. Let me go back to the first one and take a poll. Does everyone think that at a very minimum, the working group has the option of providing a detailed explanation as to why it did or did not accept comments? So I'm assuming this one's probably going to be everybody, but Robin said yes. So I'm thinking yes. Okay, so it's at a very minimum an option. Okay, now let's go to the next one. Should that standard be should? That a working group should, but not required, should provide a detailed explanation for why it does or does not. Okay, so everyone seems to agree that the minimum is at least should. Now let's clear that. Let me ask the question. Should the standard be must, that a working group must provide a detailed explanation as to why it did or did not accept comments? So Robin, Gabriel, and myself said yes. James said no. So let me ask you, James, why is it not a must and only a should?
I should have seen that coming, I suppose. I think the issue there I had, Jeff, was when you say must and then you say detailed, and I'm just concerned that if someone feels that their comment was not sufficiently or in enough detail explained, or still, even after an explanation, still doesn't agree with the conclusions of the working group, then I'm afraid you paint the working group into too small of a corner if you use the word must.
Well, is it the word must or is it detailed?
I think that when
I don't know how else you could say it besides detail, but I think that the concern that I have is that, you know, you're going to get folks that are going to comment, let's say if a working group reaches a unanimous consensus, if you can imagine a world where that happens, on an issue, and there's one person in the community that feels that that consensus was wrong or disagrees strongly, I think that, you know, I just feel that, you know, you're saying to some effect that that the consensus of the working group is diminished or discounted somewhat because someone doesn't agree that either their comment was incorporated into it or wasn't explained in a sufficiently detailed enough reason, or, you know, the bottom line is they just still don't agree with the outcome. So I'm just trying to make sure that we don't tie the hands of the working group a little too tightly here.
Okay. Paul, do you have a comment on that?
Yes, Jeff. I largely agree with James, and I'm just thinking again of some recent experiences. I think the challenge here is not so much the underscoring that working groups should be doing something like this and even use a strong word like must. The challenge for us will be the actual language that we use in putting this forward. Again, just because thinking of experiences where we've had a long-running debate within the working group, we go to review comments. There's a question about what the particular commenter was trying to say. In some cases, we've even reached out to that person another time, of course, which extends the amount of time it takes to get the work done. And even then, we're still not sure when we come back with an answer. The working group's still not really sure, and it almost becomes like this endless potential for an endless loop going back and forth. So,
okay, so
I wasn't against the idea of making this, you know, something that is strongly recommended that we do, but I think we just need to be careful that we don't get in a situation where, you know, one person who's being obstinate about a particular point they're making, that the working group feels they're bound to try and, you know, fully incorporate that person's input in the conclusions.
Well, so I think you're saying two different things, right? One is just the affirmation of commitments document says that ICANN is required to provide, it uses the word detailed explanation as to why it does not or does adopt certain comments. What I'm kind of playing devil's advocate for is how could that be required of the top and not of the bottom?
I agree with you, Jeff, but our question 5F uses two different verbs, how to review and incorporate. My hang-up's on the incorporate part, like James.
Okay, that's fair.
Maybe
so,
split this into two parts as well.
So if first part is reviewing...
Review.
And respond.
Then I agree with you.
Well, how about and respond? Not necessarily incorporate, but you have to respond as to why you did or did not incorporate. Does that change things? You know what? We've reached kind of the hour and a half. Why don't we leave that? We'll come back to that question on, and maybe think about it. And maybe, Marika, can we send around I'll send around the relevant section of the affirmation of commitments just so we can possibly use the same language? Because I'm not sure they have the word incorporate in their language, but rather just a review. So why don't we send out a language, and that language may just help to answer that question. So I'm going to do that. The next call is, just to end the call, the next call is next week, the 15th, at our regular scheduled time, which is, remind me, it's 1400 UTC time, which is 10 a.m. Eastern U.S. time, 7 a.m. Pacific time. And I don't know actually when people are actually changing over their clocks. I know the U.S. does it later than most of the rest of the world this year. So at that one, we'll finish up hopefully stage three, and we're continuing to work on the stage two draft report and the stage three survey all to have for Seoul. Any questions? Okay, thank you, everyone.
Jeff, do you have time to discuss this now after this call?
Not right this moment, but I will call you.
Thanks, guys.
We'll talk. Hopefully tomorrow morning or something like that.
Okay, that would be great. I'll send you my number.
Okay, great. Thanks. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks.
All right, bye.
Goodbye.